very hot here in Los Angeles, and sort of lazy, bright light, sun beaming down on us. A quiet day, at least for me, and for this news hour, too. So let's talk about religion. Only 40% of Americans can name more than four of the Ten Commandments. Only about half can cite any of the four authors of the Gospels. 12% of Americans believe that Joan of Arc was Noah's wife. This failure to recall the specifics of our Christian heritage may be further evidence of our nation's educational decline, but it probably doesn't matter all that much in spiritual or political terms. Here's a statistic that does matter. 3/4 of Americans believe that the Bible teaches that God helps those who help themselves. That is, 3 out of 4 Americans believe that this uber-American idea, a notion at the core of our current individualist politics and culture, which was in fact uttered by Ben Franklin, the only president of the United States who was never president of the United States, it actually appears in Holy Scripture. The thing is, not only is Franklin's wisdom not biblical, it's counter-biblical. Few ideas could be further from the gospel message with its radical summons to love of neighbor. On this essential matter, most American, quote-unquote, Christians, are simply wrong, as if 75% of American scientists believe that Newton proved gravity causes apples to fly up. Asking Christians what Christ taught isn't a trick. When we say we are a Christian nation, and overwhelmingly we say that, it means something. People who go to church absorb lessons there and make real decisions based on those lessons. Increasingly, those lessons inform their politics. One poll found that 11% of U.S. churchgoers were urged by their clergy to vote in a particular way in the 2004 election, up from 6% in 2000. When George Bush says that Jesus Christ is his favorite philosopher, he may or may not be sincere, but he is reflecting the sincere beliefs of the vast majority of Americans. And therein is the paradox. America is simultaneously the most professedly Christian of the developed nations and the least Christian in its behavior. That paradox, more important perhaps than the much touted ability of French women to stay thin on a diet of chocolate and cheese, illuminates the hollow at the core of our boastful, careening culture. So sit back, relax, press your ears up against the speakers. It's time for the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour for the 28th of July, the end of July, 2005. No guideposts in the future, nothing to depend upon. The only thing we know is that there'll probably be a Democratic president in 2008, and he'll be a shit heel too. Just not as evil as the careening assholes that we have today. Well, I'm your faithless host, Bennett, and I'm proud to be sitting here bringing you all this wonderful stuff. So, like I say, relax. Just take it easy. Today, it's just easy. I mean, I've got a bit of an interview with Brian Eno, some stuff with Bill Maher, and little more about Christians coming up. I don't know. It's just another impressionistic day. And oh, aren't the impressions lovely? Oh, long lost souls in hell. This is the weekly news in review, posted July 26, 2005, by Paul Ford. And this is for the Thursday, July 28th, Impressionistic News Hour here on Kill Radio. I'm your faithless host, Bennett. Thank you very much, Paul Ford. It was hot in most of the United States. Many U.S. cities set records for high temperatures, and huge wildfires burned in the Southwest. At least 20 people, many of them homeless, died from the heat in Phoenix, Arizona. Concern over storms in the Gulf of Mexico led to an increase in oil prices. I guess any excuse. But meanwhile, the directors of Enron gave themselves large raises. Investigations into the expenses of former Tyco executive Dennis Kozlowski revealed that Kozlowski had once held an extravagant bachelor party for his son-in-law. Now, it wasn't like a three-ring circus, said the son-in-law's father. It was a nice party. There was only one dwarf. Germany declined to finance a bald man's toupee, even though the state covers the cost of wigs for women who have lost their hair. Michael Jackson announced that he would build another Neverland near Berlin. Now, Michael, really, shouldn't you do this in Denmark, where the pornography laws are much more relaxed, and you can actually get some of those magazines about things you like so much? A German magazine published a coupon for free sex with prostitutes. Heidi Fleiss was planning to open a brothel in Nevada. I'm a perfect example of the fact that prison does work, she said. I have served my time. Now we'll do my time legally. Do my crime legally. Speaking of legal crimes, President G.W. Bush nominated John G. Roberts, a federal appeals court judge, to the Supreme Court. Roberts has criticized U.S. abortion policy, but is considered very handsome. American women will love him, said an editor at More Magazine. What the fuck is More Magazine? I've never heard of it. I love thee, commentator David Brooks wrote of the nomination. With the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach, I love thee. Freely. Huh? Bill and Hillary Clinton paid off the last of their legal bills, and a Kenyan man was reported to have offered 20 cows and 40 goats to the Clintons in exchange for their daughter Chelsea. But isn't she engaged? Another octopus learned to open lids. More bombs went off in London's public transport system, but only the detonators of the bombs exploded. Automatic head detonators. There was one injury. Around 20 London police officers chased a Brazilian electrician named Jean-Charles de Menezes onto a train and then shot him dead, thinking he was a terrorist. Later, a suspicious package in Little Wormwood Scruds was detonated safely. Members of the British government said that the bombings were not related to the war in Iraq, but only 28% of British people agreed. A Muslim cleric in London said that such attacks would continue. The U.S. House of Representatives voted to keep most of the USA Patriot Act, extending provisions that allow the search of library and medical records by 10 years. Periodically revisiting the Patriot Act, said Representative Martin Meehan, a Democrat from Massachusetts, is a good thing. In New York City, police began random bag checks of subway passengers. The CIA was granted the power to secretly interrogate Irish citizens in Ireland, and the Pentagon asked Congress to allow people up to age 42 to enlist in the military. We'll make those goals, won't we? Tommy Thompson, former Secretary of Health and Human Services, announced that he would have an RFID identity tag inserted into his body. U.S. Congressman Tom Tancredo, Republican of Colorado, said he did not advocate bombing Mecca, but he did not want to rule out the possibility. 52 prisoners were on hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay. You can't handle the truth. A study found that 24,865 civilians have been killed in Iraq during the last 2 years. I wonder what study that was, because we've been hearing figures of over 100,000 civilians killed for a while. And to say 24,865, well, that's a lower number than 100,000, and so it means that the right-wingers can now say, well, the Democrats, they just lied to us and said that we were killing 100,000 people. 24,865, well, that's acceptable. That's just collateral damage, you know. We had to get rid of Saddam Hussein, so we had to kill 25,000 people. Just simple. Just think about it. In Baghdad, a suicide truck bomb killed 25 more people. 36 people were killed in Yemen during riots over fuel prices. Film producer David Lynch announced that he wants to raise $7 billion to promote transcendental meditation peace. What, has David Lynch lost his mind? Executed two teenagers for raping a 13-year-old and for being homosexual. And U.S. rapper Big Tigger denied that he was gay. Lance Armstrong won the Tour de France for the seventh time, and a study found that French people think they look good. Shows what they know, huh? The U.S. House of Representatives passed an amendment to start broadcasting radio and television programs into Venezuela that will counter the anti-Americanism of Telestar, a new Latin American TV station. Venezuela's president, Hugo Chavez, called the plan a preposterous imperialist idea. A British court, acting under the legal principle of universal jurisdiction, convicted a man named Faryadi Zardad on torture charges for events that took place while Zardad lived in Afghanistan, where he would often unleash a human dog, a crazed man he kept in a hole, on captives he was holding for ransom. In London, where he has lived since 1998, Zardad ran a pizza parlor. A bipolar Indiana woman beat her two young sons to death with a dumbbell so that the boys could go to heaven. That was thoughtful of her. Florida police were looking for a naked man who steals into the homes of elderly women late at night and tickles their feet. China plans to create... Iran whipped an egg into 40 pigs into space. And authorities in Malaysia arrested 58 people who worship a giant teapot. That news makes sense. Yes, it does. And that's what's happening July 26, 28, 2005. Aren't you glad somebody read this to you? Aren't you glad that somebody cares enough to do it for you? Thanks for listening. Don't you wish everybody did? That's pre-recorded, and oddly, it started jumping there. But I guess that just makes it more impressionistic. I'm just relaxed here. You should be relaxed, too. What happens in the Impressionistic News Hour is I go around looking for things to tell you about, and then I tell you, and then I move on and tell you something else. So, I got an interview with Brian Eno coming up in a little bit that's like 20 years old, and I'm going to play some of Gore Vidal's talk about our election back last fall. I mean, you know, it's a relaxed day. Enjoy. Think about things. Maybe.
And earlier this week, a flight bound from London to L.A. was forced to land in Boston because the crew thought three Pakistani men were acting strangely. In both cases, the men turned out to be guilty of nothing more than looking Middle Eastern.
Muslim Americans continue to be targeted at a rate higher than their percentage in the population.
Today, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, America's largest Muslim civil liberties group, said a new national survey shows the majority of Americans have a favorable opinion of American Muslims, up even higher than before the 9/11 attacks. But the results also show law enforcement isn't following that trend.
Unreasonable arrest complaints increased from 7% of the total cases reported in 2003 to 28%. This is actually the only category that we cite in this report that actually went up.
But these days, travelers are constantly being urged to stay vigilant, to keep an eye out for suspicious people or items left behind. For people who are Muslim or just look Muslim, it's been a tough time to be a traveler.
I get security checks, random security checks, but I don't think they're so random because my last name is Muslim.
Others argue that racial profiling is inevitable when national security is on the line.
I think if they aren't profiling to a certain degree, they're not doing their job.
A job that is getting much harder these days and much more controversial. Now, Karis released a national TV ad that they hope will show people that Muslim Americans denounce terrorism as much as any other Americans do.
Dead air. Have a CD problem. Somebody screwed up with something here. Oh, see, it's a good thing I'm relaxed, right? It's a good thing. It's a good thing I'm not uptight. Here's the Brian Eno interview for you. It's about 20 years old, but there's plenty of interest in it and a lot of good music.
Cheers! Good afternoon. This is Charles Amerikanian, and welcome to a special program featuring Brian Eno, who's in the studios with us today. Brian was born in East Anglia in May of 1948. He studied at the Fine Arts School in Ipswich and Winchester between 1964 and 69, and received a degree in Fine Arts from Winchester School of Arts. He was a founding member of Roxy Music, and in 1978 produced with painter Peter Schmidt a set of oracle cards called Oblique Strategies, which we'll be talking about later on our program. He's also written for Studio International and has lectured extensively in the United Kingdom. In 1975, he founded Obscure Records, a label devoted to experimental music, and in 1978, he founded Ambient Records for the release of environmental music. He's written an essay called Self-Regulation and Autopoiesis in Contemporary Music, soon to be published in a book called Challenge to Paradigms. And the essay concerns applications of cybernetics to various disciplines. His work has also been used in a large number of films and television programs, and he's scored music for two plays and a ballet. Recently, Brian Eno began working with video equipment, and thus far has had two shows of his work in New York, both of them at the Kitchen Center for Video, also one show in Tokyo. Presently, he's working on a video disc presentation with a choreographer. Eno is the producer of many albums featuring his own music and those of collaborators. Here Come the Warm Jets, Taking Tiger Mountain by Strategy, Another Green World, Before and After Science, Music for Airports, Music for Films, Roxy Music, After the Heat with Cluster, the one we're listening to now in the background, two albums with David Bowie, Low and Heroes. He produced Are We Not Men for Devo, Ultravox One, No New York, a sort of compendium of current new wave activity in New York City, and for Talking Heads, Fear of Music and More Songs. The first piece that we just heard that you did with Talking Heads on the album Fear of Music, Brian, mm-hmm. it utilized a sound poem by Hugo Ball, is it?
That's right.
You were interested, as I understand it, in phonetic poetry and did some work in this field. Could you talk about that for us?
Yeah, I guess it was the first musical area that I was interested in. It was kind of music in disguise, so I allowed myself to be interested in it. At the time, I'd been listening to music for a long time. And since I couldn't play any instruments and could scarcely control my voice, I considered that I didn't really have a future in that area. And shortly after I went to art school, I became aware of this area called phonetic poetry, which I found very impressive and interesting. I remember particularly going to see a big festival at the Albert Hall of contemporary poetry and being very impressed by a man called Ernst Jandl, who did a number of phonetic poems. He's a barrel-chested Austrian man with a tremendously powerful voice, and I was very impressed by his work. Subsequently, I began looking into the work of Schwitters and Richard Hulsenbeck and Hugo Ball, of course, who's the poet used in Izimbra. And I began writing and performing my own phonetic poems. It was a period that lasted for only for about 6 months, I suppose, but it was important in that it started me using tape recorders in an interesting way, because shortly after I began doing work with my own voice, I began building up backing tracks of lots of other voices from which to, on top of which to do my poems, so that I was starting to work with multi-tracking, if you like. That's
The shine, 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 and gonna burn the leader on the fuse. Unlock the numbers, counting 3, 6, 9 years, and a building webs across our shoes. Celebrate the loss of one and all, and separate the torso from the spine. The vendor bouncing like a ball, so the vendor bargain, lend the shine.
So this in the background was the voice of Kurt Schwitters, the sound poet from the 20s, right?
That's right, there's Kurt Schwitters there. I think that recording was made in 1929. It's a very old recording. And also behind him, but very hard to hear, is Richard Holsenbeck, another recording.
Is that right? Huh?
From about the same time, yeah. And this piece itself is a very phonetic piece. All the lyrics on this are pretty much like a Kurt Schwitters poem anyway.
That piece of music is from an album by Brian Eno called Before and After Science. Well, Brian, maybe we could talk a bit about how you write lyrics for your songs, because some of the songs that you've published are extremely bizarre, literally speaking, and I've enjoyed that aspect of your work tremendously. Maybe you could talk about how you put lyrics to a song.
Okay, well, it's a peculiar and convoluted process. It's really a series of systems for tricking myself into writing lyrics. Lyric writing is, in a sense, an embarrassing thing to do, because there's a kind of exposure in writing lyrics that is really more critical than any other kind of exposure I can think of. Words have such distinct meanings that they pin you down, in a sense. So to start writing lyrics is hard. To start writing lyrics when you don't even know quite what you want to say is even more difficult. So I began inventing systems which the intention of which was to foil the critic in me and to encourage the child in me. I tend to think that one's mind is mediated by two characters. One is a critical one and the other is a playful and childish one. And we're inclined to let the critic have a bit too much sway in that balance. And so quite a lot of the procedures that I use are intended to catch him off guard for a little while so that the playful person can come out. With the lyric writing, I tend to begin by just shouting to a backing track, gradually building up a system of syllable rhythm, you might say, then getting the kind of phonetics that I want, and gradually beginning to fill in words to the types of sounds that my voice is making at this stage.
It's a very childlike procedure in a way, huh?
Yeah, it works from sound to words and from words to meaning. So it works quite the other way around from the way people normally think lyrics are written, I think.
What about this song we're listening to?
This started with just one line, which is the next one coming up.
So the basic line was everything merges with the night, mm-hmm. right? And then from there you just started improvising on that.
That's right. In fact, actually the first word was Rosalie, which is the girl's name at the beginning.
Giving up description.
few minutes with Brian Eno to discuss lyric writing and tricking yourself into making music. Isn't that also something that we know something about, too? Here's Bill Maher on Jay Leno.
Talking with Bill Maher. Let's get into politics now. How about this Karl Rove CIA thing? I want to hear your take on this.
Well, it's easy to simplify it and just say that Karl Rove is a vicious, cutthroat character assassin, and that's not true. He's also a beady-eyed, doughy, amoral putz.
Wow.
But, you know, going after the wife, even the mob doesn't do that, Jay.
Yeah, that's true.
If people don't know what the story is, and by the sound of that reaction, they don't. You know, the White House and their top guys. I mean, Karl Rove is Bush's top guy.
Right.
Scooter Libby.
Right. Scooter.
Yeah. Is Cheney's top guy. They were the ones who talked to the press. They were trying to quash this story, and in quashing the story, they had to out this CIA agent. What they were trying to tell a reporter was basically that, you know, this guy. He was sent there by his wife.
Right,
you know,
right.
Real men don't get jobs from their wives. They get it from their dads.
Yeah.
The other side is saying, well, CIA, you know, maybe it wasn't that an important job yet. It wasn't that sensitive. Excuse me, all CIA jobs are sensitive. So, you know, this guy definitely outed her, and he should go to jail.
Yeah, wow.
But he won't.
No. You don't think he'll lose his job?
Yeah, I think Bush would throw anybody off the ship if it meant saving a, you know, point in his poll ratings. Right. But I don't think he'll have to do that because I don't think people care or pay attention because, excuse me, Jude Law is banging the nanny.
Right. And that's the big story.
And that is diverting us from what's really important, which is what's going on with Tom and Katie.
Now, let me ask you about John Roberts, the Supreme Court nominee guy. Seems like a nice guy, a Harvard, and a graduate.
Freak. Must be a freak.
Anybody
that clean-cut is always a freak. No, when they look like that, trust me, he is not the only one who has seen Long Dong Silver in that court. This guy's underwear is filled with warm mashed bananas. I'm telling you, when they look like that, they are freaks.
Now, really?
I don't know. Look, Bush has every right to appoint whoever he wants. He won the election. Yeah. He's a conservative. This guy is extremely conservative. What bothers me is that they paint him as such a moderate and a reasonable choice. He's a very conservative man. That's okay. Like I say, Bush won. But, you know, the right wing, especially with the election of George Bush, has moved the goalpost so far to the right that we assume that anyone who is not a barking lunatic on the street corner like Pat Robertson is a moderate. This guy is not a moderate, but just the fact that we have a president who, for example, says the jury is out on evolution. Evolution. And he's not that sure about gravity. He thinks it might be angels pulling your pants down. So when you have that,
what is it? Angels pulling your pants down.
That might be what
the audience
gravity
just,
is.
Yes. Gravity is.
So a guy like this looks moderate, and he's not. None of the Bush appointments are really moderate. I could give you many examples. My favorite is Dr. David Hager. Do you know who that is?
I don't know Dr. David.
He is the number two man at the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. He's a gynecologist. He was in the position of the number two guy who was overseeing women's rights, women's
health issues.
He's the guy who made sure that we don't have the RU-482 morning after pill. Okay, this is the guy who wrote a book that said if women have premenstrual problems, what they should do is read scripture. I'm not kidding. He wrote a book with his wife about this. Said, you know, if you haven't been prepared, go to Jesus on this one. Turns out his wife left him after 30 years claiming, get this, I'm going to be very delicate about this, but I'm just reporting this. I'm not making this up. His wife said that he anally raped her in her sleep. I'm assuming she woke up somewhere during the event. So here we have the case. Wait, is that? I'm not making this up. This is a Bush appointment.
You can't make this up. Go ahead.
Right. And he did not deny it. Yeah. He said the reason why he was doing it in the naughty place was that he missed.
So good night, everybody. That's our show for tonight. We're now officially off the air. Thank you. Good night.
Wait a second. What you have, Jay, here is a case of a gynecologist claiming he cannot find his own wife's vagina. I rest my case about George Bush appointment.
It's all in this new book, The New Rules.
Yes, George Bush appointments. You know, he's right. He's absolutely right. Bill Maher's absolutely right. John Roberts is so handsome, there has to be something sick under that surface. Discovering that we have some equipment problems here in the studio, which is sad. But the Winamp, which was cutting out on me earlier, I wonder why. So I'm going to try to play... This is a talk by Gore Vidal that was recorded last winter, and it regards the election, but it tells us something about the mindset that's happening here now, and I think this is as good a time as any to listen to Mr. Vidal. He's a wise contemporary speaker. And he gives us something to think about. So let's join him.
1978, he's warning us.
In progress.
What he has in mind for us. In 04, he says, this is the revolution. So, remember that the tree of liberty must be occasionally watered with the blood of tyrants and of patriots. But let us hope it does not go that far. Meanwhile, we're up against a great confusion about who we are in the world, and the tragedy of this election was that at no point were any real issues allowed to be discussed. Kerry was easily the worst candidate that the Democratic Party has fielded in my lifetime. Dukakis was wiser, and often more to the point. Anyone who goes on booming in that awful Massachusetts politician, boom, 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 way, and if I'm president, I will do this and I will do that, and your brain shuts down. And yet millions of us wanted him to win. I used to make excuses for him. Well, you know, he doesn't have to be a good speaker. Then he said, of course, I would have supported the war, even if I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. With that, he destroyed himself, which was perhaps wise, leaving us with Mr. Vigory's president, George W. Bush, who has no plan but many designs on the Treasury and on our civil liberties. And who knows what further military preemptive adventures around the world. So here we are. Bush likes to use the word crusade. You know, he doesn't know what it means. It comes from the Latin crux, which means cross. And a crusade is an adventure for the cross, as were the original crusades of the Christian west of Europe into the Islamic world of the Middle East and further east. So there he is using the most dangerous word, which is sure to ignite the Muslim world and give away our game, and then with Tony Blair, who seems to have found Jesus somewhere or other, not in Parliament, but he found it agreeing with him. So we have two leaders of two traditional allies, England and the United States, with two leaders who want to serve our Lord Jesus. And this is really scary. It is too late in the game for Bronze Age religions. Far too late. And religions based on vengeance, religions based on eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Why are we in the Middle East? Revenge for 9/11. Well, I quite understand the emotion of revenge. I too suffer from that emotion when I regard Osama bin Laden. But we attack the wrong country. Somebody has written in that he thinks that Osama bin Laden has been reading me because he said, they translated apparently something the New York Times didn't, as far as I could tell. His entire message to us after the election, which was quite interesting, that if we minded our own business, we might not suffer sudden attacks and so on. And the person who wrote the letter said he's obviously been reading Gore Vidal because he quotes him when he says there's no action without reaction. A line I've been using ever since I flunked physics in school. It's the only thing I learned from physics. There is no action in nature without reaction. You cannot knock people's mosques or temples down or twin towers down without expecting a reaction. And then he also referred to, why not hit Sweden? Well, we don't need to hit Sweden. That's one of my lines. And I'd said it long before I went to Sweden this last summer. Well, I'm happy if Osama bin Laden is reading me, but he might become a little more amiable in his ways. And really, go to the United Nations and say, I would like to talk this over with the West, particularly with the United States. That would quiet Mr. Bush, because he'd have to think of all kinds of horrible things, invent them, that Osama bin Laden has been doing in order not to face the real quarrels that he has with us, and the quarrels, of course, that we have with him. It is time to make peace.
Ours is among the most spiritually homogeneous rich nations on earth. Depending on which poll you look at and how the question is asked, somewhere around 85% of us call ourselves Christian. Israel, by comparison, is only 77% Jewish. It is true that a smaller number of Americans, about 75%, claim they actually pray to God on a daily basis. Only 33% say they manage to get to church every week. Still, even if that 85% overstates actual practice, it clearly represents aspiration. In fact, there is nothing else that unites more than four-fifths of America. Four-fifths of America. Every other statistic one can cite about American behavior is essentially also a measure of the behavior of professed Christians. That's what America is, a place saturated. Christian saturation. Is it Christian? This is not a matter of angels dancing on the heads of pins. Christ was pretty specific about what he had in mind for his followers. What if we chose some simple criteria, say giving aid to the poorest people, as a reasonable proxy for Christian behavior? After all, in the days before his crucifixion, when Jesus summed up his message for his disciples, he said the way you could tell the righteous from the damned was by whether they'd fed the hungry, slaked the thirsty, clothed the naked, welcomed the stranger, and visited the prisoner. What would we find then? In 2004, as a share of our economy, we ranked second to last, after Italy, among developed nations in government foreign aid. Per capita, we each provide 15 cents a day in official development assistance to poor countries. And it's not because we were giving to private charities for relief work. Such funding increases our average daily donation by only 6 cents to 21 cents. It's also not because Americans were too busy taking care of their own. Nearly 18% of American children lived in poverty. Say, Sweden, they have 8% in poverty. In fact, by pretty much any measure of caring for the least among us, you want to propose childhood nutrition, infant mortality, access to preschool, we come in nearly last among the rich nations, and often by a wide margin. The point is not just that, as everyone already knows, the American nation trails badly in all these categories. It's that the overwhelmingly Christian American nation trails badly in all these categories to which Jesus paid particular attention. And it's not getting any better.
And that is what these great elections are supposed to mean in the United States. We have come at a turning point. This is equinoctial. We have been following such a course, let us say, of indiscriminate wars against just about everybody. Well, why not change? Why not try peace for a little while? Why not do something constructive instead of knocking down other countries' cities in order to give Halliburton and Bechtel work to rebuild what we knocked down? In other words, we have policies of a maniac. No one can make sense of them, and luckily we've got an administration which is not competent to make sense of anything. Or if it is, they certainly hide the competent people. And sense has not come our way. I've been asked, you know, how grave a crisis is this for the United States? Surely somebody said it can't be worse than the Civil War. Well, the Civil War came in stages. This is a stage in something whose end is not yet in view. Remember that these people who now govern us already have a working concentration camp at Guantanamo in Cuba. A concentration camp. It took the Civil War a long time to get around to Andersonville. We start before any kind of civil war, or we have an exterior war, except it is not a war. It is American attacks on other countries. We are the attacking nation. And we've attacked two countries and smashed them up, Afghanistan and Iraq. We now have our eye on Iran, Syria. Who knows what else is going on? Nor will we be informed in advance, nor will there be a Congress in place to question what the executive, which has now determined that anything that they think might one day be dangerous to us, must be struck now with full force. This administration thinks everyone is like itself. If you have atomic weapons, you'll use them first, of course. That makes people fear you. And you can get their oil, and you can intimidate them. Luckily, most countries' leaders do not act the way the Cheney Bush junta does. So the world is not entirely a Hobbesian jungle. But these people, before they finish, are going to turn it into one. And this is the most dangerous thing that has faced us, far more dangerous than the Civil War. The Civil War got out of hand. There were many points in which a peace could have been made. The South could have come around. The end of slavery was not the reason why it was fought. It was fought to preserve the Union. Lincoln freed some slaves because out of military necessity, a very virtuous thing to do, and had the war been based on that, the war would have been one of the most moral ones in history. But it wasn't based on it. That was an inadvertent end result for which we're all duly thankful. The difference now is that somebody who heard my comments on Vigory said, well, you act as though he had nothing that he wants except old-time Christian moral values for everybody. No divorce, no abortion, no this, no that. That was a good question because, of course, he has a political agenda. He's on the side of corporate America. They want oil. We are due to run out of, the world is due to run out of oil, according to one report that I'm told that Cheney ordered up from geologists and so on. Naturally, Mr. Vigory, who must be a very old man now, but sturdy as an ox, Mr. Vigory would like the world's oil for his people, so that they can pray to Jesus and become sunbeams. He wants also a homogeneous America, preferably Christian, since Christians are instructed by St. Paul to proselytize, to convert, even if you have to kill the person you're converting. The fact that so many Jewish groups have joined
That was Turn Me On, Dead Man, with Jesus was the first rock star. Moan. This news hour for July 28th is dedicated to the listeners over up on Upstart Radio. Really did this for you people. But this is Kill Radio's Impressionistic News Hour for Thursday, the 28th. And it was just sort of relaxed, huh? Thanks to the LA Sound Posse for the Gore of the Doll piece. Thanks to WFMU.org for the Brian Eno recording. Thanks to Harpers.org, as always. Thanks to Henry Mancini for this great experiment in terror. Thanks to Kill Radio for giving us the impetus to shoot these webs outward. Thanks to the United States. Thanks to America. Anyway, I'm Bennett, your faithless host. Listen to my music show, The Chill Room, Saturday nights at midnight on Kill, Pacific Standard Time. And thank you for listening, beautiful people. Don't forget to kill your friends.